I'd like to welcome everyone to the City of North Salt Lake Council Meeting Work Session for October 7th, 2025. I'd like to excuse Council Member Ted. Don't have senior moments at the mic. Ted Knowlton, who is traveling and not able to be with us. Our first item is a presentation by ETS talking about cybersecurity. So turn it over to Jazim Shah or whoever you want to have come up.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Jacob Johnson, and I am the founder and principal owner of ETS. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight. I just wanted to be here to support my team and to tell you guys thank you for being a customer. We've been working with you guys since 2012, back with Barry Edwards and Brian Passy and others, and it's been a pleasure to be with you guys and watch your technology evolve over time. Technology is something that is continuously evolving, and my team will touch on that tonight, but I just wanted to say thanks. It's a privilege to work with you guys to provide technical consulting and IT management and support of your guys' network, as well as cameras and phone and internet. And so thank you for allowing us to be a part of that. If there's ever anything that we can do for you, we are here to help educate and to provide information, and we want to support you in the direction that you and the city staff want to take technology. We're grateful for the support of Ken. He's been extremely proactive in working with us on some of the topics we're going to talk about tonight. And I just want to say thanks again to the City Council before I turn it over to my team. So thank you.
Hi, good evening. My name is Marshall Talvatia. I've been with ETS about 4.5 years now, and I've been leading the IT managed services team for about the last 2 years. I've prepared a presentation for you this evening to explain how ETS helps keep the city of North Salt Lake secure. Okay. So to start, I'd like to just briefly talk about the partnership. ETS has been a long-term partner in protecting city operations and data. Our mission is to protect, prevent, and reduce risk. Our approach is proactive, layered defense with continuous improvements. What we do is we secure the outer edge first, the stuff that faces the internet, and work our way inward. Cybersecurity never stands still, and ETS continuously updates solutions and applies best practices to keep the city safe today and tomorrow. The cybersecurity landscape changes fast. Strategies that were effective 5 years ago might not hold up to today's threats. That's why ETS keeps up with evolving standards and new technology so we can stay proactive and not reactive. The next thing I wanted to talk about is foundational security, things that we've done in the past to keep the city safe. This starts with next-gen firewalls that have features such as intrusion prevention, advanced threat protection, and country blocking. This is what helps keep China and Russia and all those other places out of your network. Another thing that we've done is we've separated the SCADA and corporate networks. And for those who aren't familiar, SCADA is a type of industrial control system used to monitor control processes in things like power grids, building systems, or in your case, water systems. So we've separated those completely to isolate sensitive information. There's a physical separation between those networks. In addition to that, we've kept up with regular patching and updates. This includes servers and network appliances. When there's updates available, we check that stuff and update it, schedule outages and things like that with the city. Multi-factor authentication has always been in use by ETS to protect privileged accounts and sensitive information. And one of the most important things on this list is a good backup solution. We have a very reliable backup solution that's been in place for a long time now. Some ongoing security practices that ETS does are quarterly audits. So once a quarter, we go through all your backups to make sure that they're working and the systems that you need are protected and healthy. We check firmware on all devices, includes firewalls, switches, access points, hosts, and phone systems. We do security checks on your Office 365 environment. We look at things like DMARC, DKIM, SPF, MFA. Those are a lot of acronyms that I don't expect anyone to know, but simply put, they're protocols that we've applied over the years to make your email harder to spoof and also decrease the probability of spam and phishing. We go through the Sophos Central tenant every quarter. That's antivirus. We look at, go through all those alerts, make sure nothing bad's going on. And we help with continuous tech planning. So that's every quarter we go through and do that. In line with that, we also ensure that best practices are continuously applied. So whenever we find out about a new or better security measure, we implement it during those quarterly reviews. An example of this, a few years back, we locked down all the WAN interfaces to ETS. So anything that could be managed from the internet, we've locked down to only select few IP addresses so that malicious actors can't even try to access it. Additionally, you know, we've implemented a lot of security protocols in Office 365. That's a big one. I mean, email breaches happen all the time, and we try to be very proactive about mitigating those issues. Patching and system management. So we have a centralized patch management software. It's called Pulseway. It's applied to all of your servers. So this automatically runs patches and updates as they come out. And as of September 2025, this includes workstations. So all the city's computers are also part of this patch management system. So as soon as a machine is joined to your domain, they're enrolled in the software and we can control patches and inventory. So it's pretty significant. Security audits. This is something that's kind of new in 2025. ETS has adopted a more customer-focused approach to cybersecurity. And what I mean by that is in 2025, ETS made a shift, not in what we do, but how we deliver it. We've always been proactive in cybersecurity, but we realize the real value is in making these results visible and engaging our partners in the process. We've seen organizations we do not manage get hacked, and we've been there to help clean up and learn from their mistakes. And we feel that being informed and engaged helps provide a better outcome on all fronts. So, you know, new this year, we have an audit that we've put together and have presented to the city. Something else that we do that may not always be seen is all the alerts that happen in your Office 365 tenant, they get forwarded to our help desk team. And then we lodge investigations as needed. So what this does is we'll get an email that says so-and-so might have had a suspicious login. We'll look at that, determine if it was malicious or not, and then try to address and fix the issue before the staff member might even be aware. So that's pretty significant as well. One other thing that I skipped, in line with patch management, I just wanted to touch on this. A great example of what the security audits have done for us is get that remote management software deployed to all the workstations. Thank you to Ken and the department heads for moving that forward so quickly. It was good to get that done. And because of that decision, we now have better visibility into patch management and inventory, which directly impacts your security posture. So just goes back to just informing and getting you guys engaged in some of these decisions and the impact that comes from that. So again, thank you guys. The next steps, this is about a platform called Agile Blue. So ETS deployed this security platform called Agile Blue in August of this year at no cost to the city. And what you're getting from this is 24/7 Security Operations Center, or SOC. SOAR, which is Security Orchestration, Automation, and Response. And what this does is it ties all your systems together and allows Agile Blue to respond on all fronts. So if it looks like there's ransomware on a server, it can isolate that server. If it looks like one of your users is compromised, it can disable that account without us even interacting. So it could be 1, 2 in the morning and nobody's awake, but you're still protected. This platform also gives us SIM, which collects and analyzes logs from all different sources in one place to paint a very complete picture of what's going on. And currently, we've covered your firewalls, servers, antivirus, Office 365, and routers with this platform. So we're excited about that. It's a big step. The benefits for North Salt Lake are real-time identification and response to threats, protection against ransomware, phishing, viruses, and more. Yesterday's antivirus isn't enough. What Agile Blue does is it delivers a detection, prioritization, and response, turning alerts into actual actionable outcomes. You get the 24/7 peace of mind instead of relying on a company's business hours. This service is 24/7. And this is the level of protection that is now being recommended by NIST, CISA, and expected by cyber insurance providers. A modern, monitored, and proactive security posture. Traditional security tools are like locks on your home, necessary but only part of the picture. In reality, a network has over 65,000 doors. Agile Blue is the security system that monitors all of them at once, detecting, correlating, and responding to suspicious activity in real time. It's not about having good locks anymore. It's about knowing when somebody is testing them. So it gives us just a lot of visibility and insight into what's going on the network at all times. Summary and next steps. So ETS has provided a strong cybersecurity foundation for North Salt Lake, continued with quarterly audits, patching, and proactive monitoring. Agile Blue adds the most powerful layer yet, round-the-clock defense, and from here, our next steps are to complete recommendations from the latest security audit. And that is all I have prepared for this evening. But if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
I have a couple. I know the state of Utah has something that's available to cities. Should we be involved in that as well? Go ahead. Sorry.
I apologize. Agile Blue is the same type of product. We researched and vetted several different platforms that do the same thing, such as Adlumin, SentinelOne, and AgileBlue, and we felt that ETS is in a good position to partner with AgileBlue for a few reasons. We feel we could build a good relationship with them. We've seen the product in action, and we know it works well. And it's something that we're able to deploy and manage for you guys that fits into our solution stack. So it's similar, very similar to what's being offered for free. ETS is also offering this for free, and it's same tier of product.
So I guess my question is it good to have two free products, or is that just...
That could cause problems. If two of them are trying to do the same thing, it could lead to crashes. Activity on one might look malicious on the other. Yeah. So I probably wouldn't recommend using both at the same time. I feel that the city is adequately protected with AgileBlue.
Okay. My second question, and maybe you can just walk me through this, like pretend like I'm not a tech expert at all. So let's say I don't know it, but my email's hacked or something, and I send something to Ken, but it's not really me sending it, but he thinks it's me, and so he goes and opens that, and there's a virus or a Trojan horse or ransomware or something. What happens at that point? He's opened it. He doesn't even know maybe that it's bad. What are the procedures? How do we stop that from happening?
Absolutely. Well, with the measures we have in place, it likely would have been stopped before that email ever had a chance to send. Because what the platform does is it monitors Office 365. So if it sees a login from an unusual location or impossible travel, so say it logged in from New York when 5 minutes ago you just checked in from here, that's impossible travel, and that would have flagged it and blocked the account. There's also scanning that takes place in Office 365 that would identify a malicious link that was sent. So we would also have an email and an alert for that, at which point we would disable the account and start calling you guys. It will also tell us who it was sent to, so we could even reach out and say, hey, don't open that email. If you did open it, give us a call right now because we got to reset your account and lock it down. But that is the real benefit of AgileBlue, is that we have a service that's watching this 24/7 for us. And we've authorized them to go ahead and disable accounts without confirming with us first. We figure it's better for somebody to come in the morning and not be able to get into their email than come in the morning and realize that 100 malicious emails were sent from their account. So that's the approach we've taken there.
Okay. I guess I just look at it like the residents reach out to us sometimes, and we don't know them. And so the old standby is like, is that look suspicious or something? We would have no idea. We just open stuff that is sent to us. And so.
Well, we do have ETS uses this product as well internally, and I can tell you that our accounting team gets a lot of malicious emails because I get the alerts basically weekly saying, hey, this email was sent to your accounting team and it looks malicious. And then I usually just forward that to the team and say, hey, nobody opened this, right? So we are positioned to catch things like that.
So I just have a follow-up question on the mayor's question. We once in a while, and it's not as much as it used to be, we have phishing emails. So the email that the mayor described where he's asking for me to give him a call, or he wants a gift card or something, which we don't get.
And by the way, I'm not getting those.
Yeah.
If you could pick it up a little bit.
So, but are you saying this software catches that now more with more regularity?
That, along with the other things that we've implemented over the years to reduce phishing and spam. Yeah. But yes, if there's a malicious link in an email, that's something that would trigger an alert. Now, just words that say, hey, can you go buy me a gift card, might not be caught. But that's where the user training comes in, where we'd like to educate everybody to the point where they raise a red flag and say, does he really want me to get a gift card?
No one has bought a gift card for the mayor, so that's that's a good sign our training's working.
I'm going to answer a question. Do you mind if I jump in here really quick? And there's maybe a different angle I wanted to take to the mayor's question. First of all, if there's a program the state is running, we would love to hear about it. We'd love to participate in it, and we want to do a comparative analysis on it and see if we're aligned. For example, we do a lot of IT work with other cities and with special service districts such as South Davis Metro Fire or with the Water District. We've done proactive security audits and implemented tools for network scanning with Department of Homeland Security, and sometimes they offer those at no additional cost. And so if there is a program that any council member hears about or staff hears about, we'd like to investigate that and make sure that it's complementary and not duplicative. And then in addition to that, you're asking all the right questions, and I hate to tell you this, considering my background is in information security and counter cyber terrorism, there is no perfect answer. I can tell you, unfortunately, the people we love, the people that work at the city, you as council members, if you have a device in your hand, an email address, we're all the weakest link, unfortunately. And probably one of the areas that we need to spend more time on is actually in the training and capacitation and helping people understand. And I'm not saying run gotcha campaigns or do like simulated phishing ad nauseum, but helping people understand and be able to see the threats is important, because we can build a perfect system. We can build that home to protect all the doors on the house and try and keep all the criminals out. But if we leave the doors open through negligence or through lack of awareness, and we become victims of social engineering or other things, it doesn't matter how great Agile Blue is or how good our antivirus is. It's only as good as we are trained to use it and to implement it. We've done a good job of implementing it, but we need to spend more time working with Ken to continue to define a program, in my opinion, that is more employee focused and keep providing training and education about the current landscape. I don't know if that answers your question a little bit more, but I feel confident in the products that we're using, and I feel confident that we're adding them as an additional value without charging the city anymore. These are real threats, but training is going to be probably a big part of the way forward. It has been that way for the last 20 years that I've been doing this. So,
and maybe I'd just add on this question of the state's involvement in cybersecurity, they do have what's called the Utah Cyber Center. And I reached out to them. The council actually had some notifications they forwarded to me. So I reached out to them. They invited us to have an initial 30-minute virtual call with them, and suggested that we have our IT service provider with us and anybody else in our organization. So when we do that, we'll make sure you guys are part of that. I'm very curious also what the differences might be and whether there's a way to build on what we're doing with ETS and add to it, or perhaps we look to the state for training, or, you know, I just don't know. We did go to a presentation last week, the mayor and I, and maybe others saw that too, but where we had a good explanation of what the state's trying to do. I think the state of Utah is very worried about cyber attacks for any of their political subdivisions, including the state.
And rightfully so.
They're pretty vulnerable too.
If you were to take a look at what has happened to the state insurance fund or mm-hmm. to private third-party insurers, you would understand why. I mean, I was involved in a different incident that happened with a city in the state of Idaho, hauled us in to look at something. And I mean, fundamentally, we're doing all the right things to put you in a better position. But if somebody leaves the doors open, I mean, the damage is pretty big. So training is a part of it, having the right tools, and then participating in ongoing discussions with other entities that operate in the same sphere. to learn how we're going to better secure your process control systems, to learn how we're going to protect police and public information, personally identifiable information. Also to coming up with better ways of understanding the type of data the city is processing and creating a culture in which people are not afraid to ask questions. You don't have a problem if somebody makes a mistake and they're quick to respond. It's always going to be better than if they're ashamed or they feel uncomfortable to talk about it. Or ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance will breed problems. And so if they're staff members, we want to create a framework whereby they can get training to help them do their job and protect the city's information, because people aren't here to steal money from the bank account directly. They're here to gather information and to compel the city to have to respond to that. That is becoming the world that we live in, is one in which these cyber criminals are extorting the cities and other community anchor institutions out of money through the form of insurance or ransomware or other things. We want to get it to the point where we're not a soft target.
So as a follow-up, so yeah, I always looked at like, well, our backup, if we have good backup, we're good. But is it Trojan horses that don't do anything for a year or something, and then all of a sudden?
That's a great question, and I mean, Trojan horses, like the name implies, going back to Greek history or back to the Roman history or whatever it is. Sorry, I was a computer science major, not a history major. But the bottom line is somebody tries to wheel data in and with a malicious payload, and then it unloads on you later when you're not paying attention. The way we do backups is we do backups on a set basis several times a day. You guys have an on-site backup appliance that's backing up all of the data on a regular basis. And then we're taking that backup and we're replicating it to encrypted before it leaves the facility to two data centers, so that we know that we have two gapped backups that are separated from the one that we have here. One, if this building was to burn down, we could bring your servers back up within a matter of hours. We do IT for a hospital down in the Four Corners area, and they didn't have a ransomware or a cybersecurity incident, but they had a piece of hardware fail. And it failed at 6 o'clock at night, and Marshall and I remotely got in and brought all their data back from this series of backups. It took us probably about 5 hours, but nobody knew that they were down other than the staff that were on that night before. You guys have that same level of backup in which we have local on-site backups plus duplicative backups in order to separate those. And we're not just holding on to 1 or 2 days worth of backups. We're holding on to years worth of backups, because we're doing daily backups, quarterly backups, annual backups, and we're saving those at a historical basis. I mean, we go back and restore email from 2-3 years ago. We go restore files from a decade ago. I mean, the quality of the backups that we're putting in are meant to address that, so that if you knew it happened and your tools told you it happened, then you would be suspicious of backups that happened at that date, and then you could go look at backups prior to that date and have multiple sources of those backups.
I've heard, it's nice to have you here, so thank you for coming. I've heard that the best backup is a backup to the cloud. Do you folks do that?
So we do, but I'm gonna say something a little bit cheeky here. When you hear the word cloud, I want you to instantly just say someone else's computer. Because that's what the cloud is. A cloud is really somebody else's computer. It's not some nebulous thing out there that we're sending data to. It's a leased server. It's a leased storage unit somewhere else that we're sending data to. So Microsoft goes and builds out data centers full of servers, and we back up to that. ETS, I've come a long way since I started this, and I met with Barry, and it was me and two employees back in 2008, 2009. ETS has two data centers here in Salt Lake. We have a data center in Boise, a data center in Seattle. At any given time, encrypted copies of your backups that can only be restored with physical backup tokens are kept in Idaho and in Salt Lake for geo separation in case we had a disaster here, other things like that. Somebody could walk into one of those data centers and they'd have to go through retinal scans, fingerprint to go remove a couple 100-pound piece of equipment out of a rack that contains those. and then they still wouldn't know the code and they'd never get any of the data back off of it. So we have you guys have it on site for ease of restoration. 9 times out of 10, when data needs to be restored, somebody made a mistake, accidentally deleted a file, an employee left, and we're looking at, did they leave us all the files that we expected them to leave? We'll always start with the backups on site, but not only are we providing backups, but we're providing disaster recovery. We're able to do so cheaper by working with you guys and with Woods Cross and others and investing in common shared architecture, i.e. the cloud. We're just not doing it by leasing directly from Microsoft, if that makes sense.
I have a couple questions. Thank you. I think this is cities' big concerns as well as individuals' big concerns. Cybersecurity is huge. I'm curious if you've had any of your clients actually experience an attack and how that went, what you learned that is now being applied. I'm curious to where you feel North Salt Lake's biggest liability or weaknesses. I'm sure you're up at night worrying about North Salt Lake all the time, so what might keep you up at night specifically with our city? And specifically with our water, because that is a concern. Maybe what the plan is and what the risk is with our water, and how that would be addressed through what you've prepared for North Salt Lake specifically.
And can I just add, we're in a public meeting, so we don't give away anything.
No passcodes or mother's maiden names needed.
Well, the only thing that keeps me up at night is that all of my hair keeps falling out, and I'm just getting older and not young and handsome anymore, I guess. I mean, in terms of does North Salt Lake keep me up at night, you guys keep me up at night a lot less than newer clients that are coming on, and we're working through years and years of technical debt. You guys have a lot less technical debt than a customer that we're in the discussions to onboard, or that we have onboarded in the last 6 months, because usually that customer isn't going to have the budget up front to connect or to remedy 20 years worth of negligence or having ignored the technical debt. Technical debt doesn't go away, it accumulates over time, and Ken has been very proactive about it. There's always room for improvement across the board, but that's where we'd want to sit down and prioritize goals and set budgets to help eliminate any technical debt. You guys, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the least, 10 being the most, I'd say maybe you're a 2 for technical debt. You're a lot less than other people. Marshall, for example, touched on, there was an acronym up on the thing that's said SCADA, basically your process control system that controls your water. I won't tell you who, but we walked into a water district that supports a major city here in the state, and the business network that people were watching YouTube videos on and downloading emails was the same network they're running the water that's distributing out to an entire county, or potentially holding water back in a dam. That's a problem. Your guys' networks are separated from each other. Gapped is the term, meaning that we're having people go log on to different terminals or different systems to get into those. We want to always continually improve that, but running those two networks separately might increase costs, but it's a best practice. So in line with some of your questions, am I worried? I'm always worried. I'm always worried about clients. If Ken was to call me at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'll answer. I mean, I'm crazy like that. And I don't do it as much anymore because Marshall's crazier than I am. He will answer before I do. But the bottom line is you have every right to be concerned, but I know the things that we're doing, and I would love to do, even in line with the mayor's point, if you guys want to know some more specifics about systems or other places that maybe the city should make an investment, it might be wise to have a private session to review those so that we're not putting it out on public record as it relates to security posture. But by and large, your risk footprint is substantively lower than the rest of the composite of municipal entities in the nation at this point. Does that answer your question without going too specific?
Yes.
Okay. I think if there was one thing that I would recommend, and this isn't a recommendation per se that's specific to the city, but to you as individuals and to the city, and something that we're going to harp on a lot, is there was another acronym on the screen, and I hate acronyms, but I told Marshall this before we did this. I'm like, make sure you explain those acronyms. But MFA, by raise of hands, does everybody know what MFA is?
Is that mechanism?
Multi-factor authentication. Oh, sure. It's a way of proving that you are you. Anybody could have your username or password through a hack or a compromise or guessing, but if there is an additional token or a credential that proves that it's you, that is one of the ways that we can drastically improve security for any system that supports multi-factor authentication. It can seem inconvenient when your bank account asks you to produce a code or it calls you and says, provide me with this code. But it is the most surefire way of us knowing that it's you logging in. I will tell you, as we work with schools throughout the state or as we work through other municipal entities, one of the areas I get the biggest pushback on is people say it's a pain in the butt to turn on multi-factor authentication. If I don't have a phone or work isn't supplying me with a phone, should I be obligated to download an app to facilitate multi-factor authentication? It's a very simple thing that we could do. I think just working through the politics and setting expectations on the city side would go a long ways to improving security by setting the standard and expectation that by default, we're going to turn on MFA and somebody's going to have to make a business case for me to turn it off. Does that make sense? It's worth the inconvenience of turning that on everywhere that you can. Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you kind of a pedestrian question, I guess. We switched over here to nslcity.gov.
Yep.
Just recently. And as a result, it's impacted my access to my little laptop. So when I deal with issues like this, I want to know that there's somebody who can help me, in fact, can get on my computer and do it for me. Now, the reason I say this is I have a son who graduated in computer science. When I ask for help like this, he rolls his eyes. It's like, I'm not going to teach you about the internet ever again. You just should know by now. But I need help. And I don't know if cybersecurity is even considered the idea that people need to be having access to their laptops.
So one of the reasons I don't work for the federal government anymore and I created ETS and came to work with the local businesses and with cities and with schools is because I like the concept of acknowledging risk, planning for it, and then saying, well, we still have to get our jobs done. I didn't enjoy working with DOD when I had to go have a 3-star general sign off on whether somebody could use a computer. Little story, when I went to work for the federal government, the first 30 days of me working there were my boss arguing with his boss about the fact that I needed to get onto a computer to do training, but I couldn't get onto the computer to do the training until I had a badge. And the badge required me to get onto a computer. And so I was caught in this loop forever and ever. And they were kind of making an example out of me to prove how broken the system was. And I'm like, this, it just shouldn't be that way. If the city council needs training, they want understanding, I would love to work with Ken to set up opportunities and with my team to educate and help. As it relates to the .gov stuff, thank you, federal government. They've been pushing that down. Part of it is an effort to secure the elections because the .gov domain is not one that anybody can just go out and acquire. The United States government owns the root control over that and it's delegated down in a trusted manner. One of the easiest ways to guarantee that you are you when an email comes is by using a .gov domain versus a .org or a .com because not very many people are going to have access to that and it's a lot harder to spoof that email address. it's also easier to integrate governmental entities as it moves up the .gov domain chain. It's easier to tie state and local back to federal on things. So it's inconvenient, but there are opportunities.
Just going to interrupt you here for a second, sure. Jacob. I think the part of the answer to your question, if I understood it correctly, is you want to know who to call, who can help you. And so
that, and also if it's part of the contract, that this kind of a call will be answered and it's not extra money that the city's
paying. We can do a few things. I know some of you have worked with Wendy on some of those problems, and that works. We can also send you, ETS has a link, I believe it is, where we can submit work orders.
A help desk, or you can call in and open a ticket and talk to a live person.
Yeah, they can talk, they can get onto your computer if it's on our network and correct those kinds of problems for you while you watch them work on your own computer or even your laptop. So we'll make sure that everybody gets that so that you'll have some areas to go when you need help.
So for example,
but you can always call Wendy and you can, sorry to put that on you, but you were going to say that to me probably.
I was just going to say, I could submit it.
Yeah. She can, any of us can submit work orders. Right.
So right now my iPad works, but my phone doesn't because of the switch.
And yeah.
And my phone works with my iPad.
Yeah, we should.
They might be willing to take a minute, not your break, and get your phones and iPads working before the next meeting.
Could you? Might. It's frustrating.
That's something that we'd be happy to work with you on. I think another discussion, too, is just making sure, and I apologize, I travel all over the country now at this point, and so I don't remember exactly how it's set up here, but does the city issue devices to the council members to use? Our recommendation would always be if we have a city-owned device that we can work with the council members on because it protects your privacy and allows us to work with you to deploy some of the software tools that we can more fully provide you direct support, whether you're at home, whether you're here at City Hall, or whether you're traveling around the country.
Yeah, that's a great question to be able to provide support to the council. So sorry that that's been inconvenient for you. But we can help you.
I just wanted to say, at my work, I have somebody that we call for IT, and they're far away, but they're always, I'm so grateful when they answer, because when I hear those little clicks on the phone, I know that they'll help me, and it's reassuring. So thank you for what you do, because you're smart, and it's appreciated, so thank you so much.
My wife, who is a North Salt Lake resident, would tell you otherwise. I'm not always the smartest guy, but I appreciate you believing in me. So
you're very smart. Don't worry.
I'm going to go home and tell my wife that. Thank you.
It's in the public record now that he's smart.
I appreciate that. So to take it a step further, too, just know that ETS's headquarters are in Layton. Most of our employees are residents of Davis and Weber County. We're only a few minutes away. If you need help, we're happy to send people down to work with you and meet you wherever you're at. We want you guys to be able to work with the city staff to affect the city's business, and we don't want technology to be an obstruction. It should be as easy as breathing. So,
I presume you're bonded.
Yes.
And to what amount are you bonded?
Well, in the state of Utah, as far as liability insurance goes, I think I carry about a $15 million rating at this point, but I'm also a licensed and bonded public works contractor in the state of Utah and in Idaho, and we carry an unlimited bond rating for public works contract projects. So, any other questions?
Well, thank you so much for coming in and
privilege. Thank you for your time.
Let's adjourn and reconvene almost on time, maybe.